I have three scriptures to read from, and if we can go in reverse order. So I'm going to read from Jeremiah chapter 30, verses 18 to 22. Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents, and have mercy on his dwelling places, and the city shall be builded upon a hewn heap. For margin reference, you'll see that's a little hill. Upon her own little hill, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. And out of them shall proceed thanksgiving and the voice of them that make merry. And I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all that oppress them. And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them. And I will cause him to draw near, and he shall approach unto me. For who is this that engaged his heart to approach unto me, saith the Lord? And ye shall be my people, and I will be your God. Then one verse from Isaiah chapter 58. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. And then just a few verses from the book of Nehemiah and chapter 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven. And if we move on to chapter 2, and just a few verses from verse 3. And said unto the king, Let the king live for ever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favour in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And finally from verse 11. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain, and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook, and viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate of the valley, and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did, neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. Amen. And our prayer, as always, is that the Lord will bless richly to our waiting hearts the reading of his own word. Well, it is very good to be here. I'm very grateful for the invitation, and my task is, as you see, to speak on the encouragement and counsel on the establishment of new causes in respect of church planting and Sunday schools. Now, this is immediately an impossible task because I'm here at the place and we've just heard a very stirring, a very rousing session from Dr. Masters, and we've all felt that we do far less than we should do, and hopefully we're thinking we should be doing much more, and we can do much more. And therefore, I must start, I think, if I can most warmly, and I'm not going to speak on these two books, but if I can just heartily and warmly recommend them. They'll probably be recommended by others, but if I can make my recommendation, The Necessity of Sunday Schools in the Post-Christian Era. This conference took place just after we'd left for Plymouth. It was most helpful to come back. And this book, Building an Outreach Sunday School, again, it's full of practical advice. Many of the potential arguments against Sunday school work are covered so well in this book, and most of the things that you will need to know and do and how to do is in this book. And I couldn't speak highly enough of either of them, and so it's not going to be my task this afternoon to repeat what is in there. I want to really speak of Sunday school work in the establishment of new causes as informed by our experience in Plymouth. And as I do so, it's good to recognise a few people here. You've been to Plymouth, you've seen us, you know what we do, and that's very, very encouraging for us. I hope it is for you as well. And there are people here who are trophies of grace, who came to the Lord through Sunday school work. There are people here who are trophies of grace, who came to the Lord through teenagers' work. And we're most grateful to the Lord for his blessings upon us. And I'm very, very concerned in a session like this that you should think that there might be anything special about me or those of us that went down to Plymouth. Not at all. And if I say anything that would detract from all the glory and all the honour being given to the Lord, then do please forgive me, because I must try hard not to do that. Well, I want to make three points, really, and then I want to give three guiding principles, and then I want to talk about materials as time permits. And I've been asked so many questions already this afternoon. Could I say something about this? Could I include that? Could I speak of our relationship with the school? Could I speak about premises? Could I address whether or not a pastor is more important than a building in a church planting work? And it may be there are some here who have been to church planting conferences. I must admit I have been to one or two myself, and I know there are different ways of doing things. My task is to tell you how we did it, how I believe it should be done, and to encourage anyone who is not operating a Sunday school work, weeknight meetings, teenage work, and preaching evangelistic gospel services on at least a weekly basis to do so. So three introductory points, three guiding principles, and a little bit about materials and resources. My first point is a brief portrait. Chris has very kindly said we did go down to Plymouth over 20 years ago. We were blessed with three young children. There was a couple who were worshipping and members at the Tabernacle. Their desire before the Lord was if anyone started a gospel work in Plymouth, they would go and assist them. I've already been asked this, why Plymouth? The answer, as I gave to the brethren over tea, was that we had come to the position that we wanted to do something for the Lord. We did feel a burden, as Chris quite rightly says, and the question was, where should it be? We had three principles for guidance. One was that my wife and myself, of course, should be absolutely like-minded. The second was that we didn't feel that we could go overseas. Neither of us speak any languages, and you're probably going to find that my English isn't as good as it could be either. But we would look for the largest city in the UK that, according to our understanding and the advice of others, had no Reformed Baptist or gospel-preaching, Bible-based, vibrant, working church. And I did think, as I said at tea, we'd end up in Manchester or Birmingham, but again and again the West Country was mentioned, and Plymouth in particular. Plymouth is a city of 250,000 people. It's the second largest city on the south coast after Southampton. And the couple, who were very keen to support anyone who went to work in Plymouth, knew Plymouth well. They had family in Plymouth, and their knowledge and insight was invaluable. I was reading recently, actually, that Plymouth is the only UK city with a population of more than 100,000 that is more than 10 miles from a motorway and more than 25 miles from the nearest airport. Someone's done their homework, haven't they? But Plymouth was a needy city, had a great heritage, and some of you will know some of those are great men of God who have served in generations past. But sadly, to our understanding, this was where the Lord would lead us. And very quickly, I think he confirmed in his kindness that this was the right place. Secondly, I just want to say this. There are different types of church planting. And if you do go to church planting conferences, of course, there are different types referred to. They talk about the strawberry method. The strawberry plant, as you know, it sends runners out and they alight on the ground. And where they alight, then a new plant grows forth, sending out a credible company from the sending church. And soon the umbilical cord is cut and that is a new church. That's not how we did it, but that is a perfectly viable way. I don't think anything I'm going to say would go against that. Another way is to set an announcement in the local paper or distribute in the neighbourhood. We are here, please come and join us, starting with some form of Bible study. That's not how we did it. In fact, we tried very hard to keep other believers away, and I don't want to sound in any way hard or ungracious here. But we just wanted to get on with gospel work. We didn't want people joining us who were going to give us the benefit of their wisdom and experience and sidetrack us right from the beginning. So we saw ourselves a little bit as the model in the New Testament. We were going to virgin territory, as we understood it, breaking up new ground, seeking to build up a church, and it would be a church based on conversions. I know Mr. Spurgeon says, and it will be quoted in the books, conversion is our aim, or conversions are our aim. Conversions were our aim, and under the Lord, they still are. So we did begin the work in May 1992, and it did start with an evangelistic afternoon Sunday school. 6 months later, we started an evening gospel preaching evangelistic service, and a year later, we began weeknight meetings, and soon afterwards, a morning service. There were four of us, we had six children, and the Sunday school started on the 3rd of May 1992. This is only one of the few times I'm going to embarrass Alison, who's sitting there. Alison was in that Sunday school. She was nearly 4 years old. She's now one of our members. And if you don't know Alison, do speak to her. You can check that everything I've said is right. We called ourselves the Beacon Park Mission. It was an evangelical church that we worshipped at in the morning. And it was most moving and unexpected that our last morning at Devonport Evangelical Church, now closed sadly, the elder there formally sent us out. We felt we had a sending out church, and that was so wonderful. And I'm going to show a picture in a minute of someone who was in that church. My third introductory point is you must know the area. It was very precious, Nehemiah-like. We scouted round. We looked. Where were the movements of people? What possible buildings would we be able to start the work in? This school or that school? We wanted movements of people. We needed to know that it wouldn't be somewhere far flung. It had to be in central Plymouth. If you don't know Plymouth, it had to be between the two rivers, the River Plym and the River Tamar. It had to be south of the arterial road, which cuts Plymouth north and south. It had to be south of the A38. Beacon Park was ideal. We wouldn't be sheep stealing, no other evangelical churches within what we now call our parish. It was very near the football club and the rugby club. Lots of people moved to and fro. There was a civil service a sports club there. It was near Central Park, Plymouth's Green Lung, and it seemed ideal. We approached the local school and they gave us permission. We asked for a terms trial, They gave us a term's trial, and at the end of the term, they were very happy to confirm our presence there, and we've been there ever since. And that's in Montpelier Primary School. It is, I think, the biggest primary school in Devon. That may not be the case, I haven't checked that. Certainly in Plymouth, and it therefore is a big site, 700 children plus on the roll. And therefore we have a very, very good pool, as it were, to fish in for children. Now I'm going to see if I can get this to work. I think if I point it at that, very good. First guiding principle. Lily is what I would call a Sunday school person. Now, I have sat in schools of theology with great delight. I'm afraid I can't see well enough to see if Mr. Heim is in here, but when Mr. Vernon Heim has been here, he's spoken of revival people. And how I have been moved to hear him speak of revival people. I've never met a revival person. But I have met Sunday school people. Lily Gray was born in 1916. She comes along to a meeting that we have in the school. We call it the Over 50s meeting. Lily is 97 next month. But she was in that church, the Devonport Evangelical Church. And she is a Sunday school person. A real love for the young. A heart that beats for children. A desire to see all the children in the neighbourhood under the instruction of the gospel. One for the Lord. Not one soul lost. And there used to be lots of people like this. Now, I've only ever been in three Sunday school situations. I know there are people here from Melbourne Hall in Leicester. I know there are people here from the Tabernacle, obviously, and there are people here from Plymouth as well. But Sunday school people, you probably know them if you're sort of my age, but that generation has largely died out. In, I think it's the necessity of Sunday schools, Dr. Master speaks of planting, pioneering a church in Boreham Wood, and visiting for children and finding that the adults all went to Sunday school and therefore they were very keen that their children should. You won't find that today because we're a generation further on. And therefore adults don't have Sunday school experience, but this generation still do. And our first desire was that we should have prayer support. You know, we have a lady who also comes to our over 50s. I haven't got a picture of her. Her name is Phoebe Tyler. I believe she was converted recently. She would say she was converted as a teenager and has been badly backslidden all the rest of her life. But she's come to us and rejoices to be with us in our morning services. And she came through distribution of calendars at Christmas. She wrote a really nice letter and thanked me for taking the photos, thanking me for selecting the texts, thanking me for putting it all together and delivering it to her. And I had to write back and say, I'm ever so sorry, Mrs. Tyler. We were given them by the Trinitarian Bible Society. We've just put them in envelopes. But that was one of about 12 letters that we've had as we've continued calendar distribution. I would start with calendar distribution or alongside Sunday school work because you will find people like this. And in our over 50s meeting, even those who I don't think know the Lord, and it is an evangelistic over 50s meeting, even with Lily present, they remember the old choruses because they did go to Sunday school. And if they're in the neighbourhood and you're pioneering and planting, you need to get them. And there isn't long left. So the sooner you get them, the better. Mrs. Tyler says to me, Richard, I'm 88. I can't get out. I can't do anything. All you people seem so busy and active. I can't do anything. And I say, yes, you can. You can do what we can't do. You can do what Lily does. You can pray. You can be prayer warriors. And those who are here from Plymouth will have heard me many times say, how I long for the day when I shall be no longer able to be active. Some may say that day has come already, but anyway, when I shall be a prayer warrior, what a glorious thing. And how we need that. And the Lord, in his great mercy, provided that in people like Lily and Phoebe now. Did you know what Jeremiah said? Their children also shall be as aforetime. Yes, our own biological family children, perhaps, but also children flocking into the house of the Lord. Zechariah has the same theme. Children dancing and playing in the street, filled with joy because they've seen and found the Lord. They've been led by those who have a heart for the young. Sunday school people to find the Saviour. And I would love to think that we have the privilege, after a lost generation, I can't really say this after what Dr. Masters has just said, but perhaps if the Lord tarries, of training up another generation of Sunday school people. What a precious thought. You know, many people say to me, Sunday school's had its day. Had its day. Try very hard not to get too passionate. But no, it hasn't had its day. Of course it's not had its day. And these two here, I've already mentioned Alison, that's Alison on the right. Christ doesn't change. The hearts and needs of children don't change. The Lord said, suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of heaven. I loved attending Sunday school in Leicester at Melbourne Hall. I used to really love that chorus that I wouldn't recommend singing, but the old Sunday school superintendent, now with the Lord many, many years, would always make the mistake at the end of Sunday school of saying, does anyone have a favourite chorus? And it was always Only a Boy Called David. I don't know if you know that chorus. I wouldn't recommend you sing it in Sunday school. I'm afraid we did then. And of course, one little stone went up, up, up. I don't know if you know it. And everyone stands on the chair and the giant came tumbling down. And we used to love jumping down and making such... I won't sing it, I'm afraid. Perhaps afterwards. I'm going to show a picture of the Sunday school anniversary in a moment. But has Sunday school had its day? No, it certainly hasn't. But I think it is the case that ground is different. And those who are here or who know Melbourne Hall will know that it is, first of all, and it was just as I was leaving Leicester, it was a centre for the Hindu population to be established. The first Hindu temple in the country is there. And then the Muslim population has come in, rather displaced the Hindu population. We used to lose, even in those days, lads at the age of 11, 12, 13. That's a difficult area, and there are difficult areas. But we do believe that there is fruitfulness to be had, and we labour on, don't we? And we don't despise small things. So we don't have a big Sunday school. We don't have a big church. But we have wonderful trophies of grace. Now, Alison, as I mentioned, was nearly four. She came along to our very first Sunday school, 3rd of May 1992. And the other young lady is Emma. She first came along on the 28th of January 1996. She was just over 5 years old. From a non-church-going family, in fact, Alison's father does now go to church. He comes to us every morning, or nearly every morning, and there was a certain nominal church attendance there, so I mustn't say things which are not strictly true. These are, as the caption says, our Class 1 teachers. Class 1 is for children up to the age of 7. You may know that as the beginner's class. There were 6 children in Class 1 on Sunday morning. And they come along, and they're a delight to have with us. We'll show you the picture of the anniversary in a moment. Our registrar tells me we've had 58 different children in that part of the Sunday school, plus the age up to 11, so 11 and under, 58 different children since September. So please don't come to Plymouth and try and tell us that Sunday school has had its day. Because it hasn't, clearly. So, my 3 introductory points. My third introductory point, actually, I'm going to gloss over if that's all right and get on to the guiding principles. And this is an example. Children converted in early days, or children who have been to Sunday school, who come to know the Lord, make the very best teachers. Now, again, I was so privileged to be in a place in Leicester at Melbourne Hall where there are many, many youngsters converted. And it is the case, and if you go back, and our brother is here, we'll confirm it. If you go back, many of those who stand still in that church were converted at the time I was a teenager, or a little bit before, or a little bit after. And I saw people who were converted as children and young people helping in. We had uniformed organisations then, in the Boys' Brigade and the Girls' Brigade. And in measure, I saw it a little bit in the tabernacle, but I had gone by the time this was really seen. But people who were converted from Sunday school attendance or from weeknight meetings, which we'll come on to in due course, have such a heart for the young. Of course they do. They look and say, I used to sit there. I used to be just as bored as you. Sorry, I don't mean this. Just as bored as you are. I used to be wishing this person would stop. I'd be saying, when can we go and play football? When can we? But now, knowing how you feel, knowing what questions are in your mind. We have another young man here who, when we started our weeknight meetings, after I'd finished speaking, and they're all dead keen to go and do something else, he'd say, you know, I've got a question you can't answer, Mr. Clark. And I said, that's very interesting, Neil. What's that? And he would ask his question. And then I would proceed to answer his question, and they were much more interested in the answer to Neil's question than there were in any material that I had prepared. And so it went on. And now it's very good that Neil has come to the Lord and helps in a variety of our meetings. So guiding principle number one. If you want good, committed workers in children's work, the best way to get them is to see them converted, to wait on the Lord, to have those prayer warriors bringing names before the Lord, in the prayer meeting, at home, urging that there may be an opening of the heart and that the seed being sown will take root in good ground. We have one teaching leader, I attempted to say superintendent, but I'm going to try and say leader, plus five teachers in the Sunday school, and of those six, four were converted at Beacon Park. One was converted here at the Metropolitan Tabernacle. We're very grateful for Craig, thank you. And the other was baptised with us. So converted, heart for the young, a rising generation of those who will do anything for the souls of the young in their neighbourhoods. We have helpers who play the piano, take quizzes, do memory verses with the children, and another two of those were converted at Beacon Park. If I can just say, and this is by way of encouragement, I trust, we have a weeknight girls, teenage girls meeting that can number anything from a dozen to 20 on a Thursday evening. Helen, my wife, leads that meeting with four regular helpers, and all those helpers were converted at Beacon Park. Our brother, Mr. Thackway, uses that expression of the Lord's people. He says they're choice believers. I do remember that because there are certain workers in Sunday school work and in teenage work who are choice workers. And in my experience, they are the ones who have been converted from the world. Yes, choice workers from the families, of course, of those who come to join the church, or perhaps from children of those converted from the world. But choice workers, the best you can hope to have. And, oh, that we would see it. Such an empathy, such a heart. But to be able to say, we know where you are. How do you develop this feeling or passion? Well, as Dr. Master said, so I don't need to say it, there are whole areas completely unreached as a generation without any gospel knowledge at all. They only use the name of Christ in cursing and blasphemy. It's very nice. I'm not involved now in the Sunday school, or we have two teenage Bible classes as well. I'm not involved in that work either. So sometimes I help with the pickup, or I can go out and simply speak to children playing in the street, seek to encourage them to come along. We can't keep the Great Commission literally. We can't go into all the world. But where is the world? Where is all the world to Beacon Park? Well, we have what we affectionately call our parish. We don't say the world is our parish, although I know some have in the past, and we're very grateful for them. But we have a parish, and we do visit, and we do distribute literature. And I haven't got any of my cards with me. I did bring them as I've left them outside. But we do have a Sunday school card, and we make sure that that is often delivered. Let me just move this on. Now, this is our recent Sunday school anniversary. It's a 21st anniversary. I could say a lot about this, but all I want to do is draw attention to the girls at the front. Now, if you work along, there's Jessica, I better not point, and then Hope, and then Macy and Kyra. Let's just mention those four. Now, they look pleased to be there, don't they? I think they do. That's why I like that photo. And you can see the sort of numbers that are there. You may recognise a Tabernacle member who happened to be visiting that weekend, which was very, very good. And you'll see our speaker at the back, and I'll mention him in a moment. But they look pleased to be there. See, we cannot say that such children don't like coming to Sunday school. I want to try and stir by something which I only came across recently. And it's a little word by John Angel James. He wrote in 1816 a book. Someone's nodding here, so I imagine you know it. And it was all about Sunday school. Workers, encouragement, need for diligence, and so on and so forth. Perhaps I can just describe someone first. On the front of one of the national tabloids, a few years ago, there was a picture of a lady, and there was a little girl, a very sad little girl. And she was hiding behind the black skirt. It was a funeral scene of her stepmother. No, it was her mother. And her brother had been killed in Afghanistan. And it was quite high profile. And if I mention his name, you may well have known him. And the little girl is Sophie, one of three. She's been so troubled when she's been with us. I remember one Friday night meeting. We were speaking on matters of life and death. Please look at the materials over there, an excellent term topic. And she was so concerned because the person who was speaking mentioned hell, not in a frightening way, in a very careful, compassionate way, but she was full of tears afterwards. And I spoke to her and she said she didn't like to hear about hell and was she going to hell. And because of the sad death, the family have moved out the area. I don't know if we'll ever see her again. But let me quote something from John Angel James. And I found this very, very stirring when I first read this. He says this: "My imagination has sometimes presented me with this picture of a faithful teacher's entrance to the state of her everlasting rest. The agony of death finished, the triumph of faith completed, and the conquering spirit hastening to her crown. Upon the confines of the heavenly world, a form divinely lovely awaits her arrival. Enwrapped in astonishment at the dazzling glory of this celestial inhabitant, and as yet a stranger in the world of spirits, she inquires, 'Is this Gabriel, chief of all the heavenly multitudes? And am I honoured with his aid to guide me to the throne of God?' With a smile of ineffable delight, such as gives fresh beauty to an angel's countenance, the mystic form replies, 'Do you remember little Elizabeth, who was in yonder world a pupil in your Sunday school class? Do you recollect the child who wept as you talked to her of sin and directed her to the cross of the dying Redeemer? God smiled with approbation upon your effort and by his own spirit sealed the impression upon her heart in characters never to be effaced. Providence removed her from beneath your care before the fruit of your labour was visible. The gospel seed, however, had taken root, and it was the business of another to water what you had sown. Nourished by the influence of heaven, the plant of piety flourished in her heart and shed its fragrance upon her character. Piety, after guarding her from the snares of youth, cheered her amidst the accumulated trials of an afflicted life, supported her amidst the agonies of her last conflict, and elevated her to the mansions of immortality. And now behold before you the glorified spirit of that poor child who under God owes the eternal life on which she has lately entered to your faithful labours in the Sunday school. and who is now sent by our Redeemer to introduce you to the world of glory as your first and least reward for guiding the once thoughtless, ignorant, wicked Elizabeth to the world of grace. Hail, happy spirit! Hail, favoured of the Lord! Hail, deliverer of my soul! Hail to the world of eternal glory! I can trace the scene no further. I cannot paint the raptures produced in the honoured teacher's bosom by this unexpected encounter. I cannot depict the mutual gratitude and love of two such spirits meeting on the confines of heaven. Much less can I follow them to their everlasting mansion and disclose the bliss which they shall enjoy before the throne of God. All this, and 1,000 times more, is attendant upon the salvation of one single soul. Teachers, what a motive to diligence. Now, we can motivate to diligence. Dr. Masters does that far better than I ever will be able to, but how can we, on our way to church, pass children playing in the street and not be moved? Who is going to tell them the gospel? Little Elizabeth might be one of those playing. Who's going to speak to her about a saviour? Who is going to make the effort? Yes, of course, there's an awful lot to do. But if you don't do it, and if I don't do it, who will? But what a thought being greeted by little Elizabeth and by possibly others. Hope there is the girl second along in the sort of hoopy. We're told that she's moving to North Yorkshire soon, although there seems to be a doubt now if that is the case. We may never see her again. But what a thought is this, to be greeted by a converted hope. Or going back to little Sophie, who we may never see again in this world, to be greeted by Sophie. Such encouragement. Sunday school has not had its day. Children will come into Sunday school, and we can see them brought to the Lord. Secondly, my guiding principle: there are many, many advantages of Sunday school work, and these are covered very much in the books that have been recommended. Entrance into the community, the trust of parents, being involved in different activities. The school is a neutral venue. It may be that people won't come into the church hall. Again, it's covered in the books. Why not hire a school? They'll certainly come into a school, especially if they attend there, or they used to attend there, or, and there are now parents in Beacon Park who are at school with our grown-up children, and they remember their days at school, and we have a rising number who came to Sunday school, 58, as I say, since September, up to the age of 11. If we go over the age of 11, of course, it's rather more. Secondly, it honours the Sabbath. Now, Pastor Jonathan Northern spoke about training up a worshipping generation when he spoke on Sunday school work. I don't want to say any more. We have the Sunday school in the afternoon. We think that's particularly advantageous, not for all the reasons that are listed, and I would heartily endorse them all, but for another reason. And that is that you can get the children to come along, or the teenagers to come along to the evangelistic evening service, so much easier. But my second guiding principle, training the teachers. You know, if people are converted from the world with no background, with no understanding of the scripture, with no understanding of, if we might say, the method of grace or the history of redemption, however we may want to say, I would suggest there is no better way and to get them in the Sunday school using the Lessons for Life material. When I was in the seminary here, I remember Dr. Masters labouring to encourage evangelistic preaching and to see arguments throughout the scripture. And I went up to him, I still remember, I don't know if you'll remember this, but I went up and said, why don't you recommend some books? And he said, like what? And I said, Lessons for Life. And he said, well, that's a little embarrassing really, because my wife's name and mine are on it. And I said, well, it's so fit for purpose. And so he recommended J.C. Ryle's Expository Thoughts on the Gospels and Lessons for Life. And if you've got youngsters who need to be grounded and deepened and taught, I can't think of anything better. And if they're teaching it to children, you've got the teacher there provided by the Lord by wonderful grace. Now you need to make sure there's an understanding of the gospel. Most teachers are your converts. They'll draw illustrations from everyday events. You'll see some showing particular gifts. So I'll embarrass just one other person, slightly embarrassing for me because he is my son, one of my sons, but he is now our Sunday school leader. And you can also see certain gifts concerning future pastoring. If you can't get on with the children, if you can't win their confidence, if you can't talk to them, then it seems to me very unlikely that you will ever be a pastor. An evangelist and pastor to the young must come before being an evangelist and pastor to adults. So let me just read this from it's a man called Professor Henry Drummond. It doesn't really matter who he is. He was speaking at a meeting in 1889, and this is following the foundation or the creation or the establishment of the Boys' Brigade. And he says this: I honestly believe it would have been worthwhile founding the Boys' Brigade, if only for the sake of the officers. If you set a man down among 770,000 people in Glasgow and tell him to try to do them good, the vagueness and vastness of the problem will paralyse his efforts. He will either do too little, or, aiming at too much, accomplish nothing. But give him 10 lads and say, there is your life work, to guard and lead boys. That compact piece of service lies within his reach, and he will brace himself to attempt it. A group of children, subject of prayer, visitation, encouragement, real effort getting to know them, their families, training opportunities for helpers too. We try not to talk too much about teachers. We talk about helpers because, again, as Dr. Mars has already mentioned, those who visit, those who collect, those who transport, those who register, those who take much care of the children. And let me just move on to this. Now, this is a man, Mr. Jeff Avery. I was very privileged and very surprised to step into Jeff's shoes. I felt they were very big shoes here in 1981, I think it was. Jeff is now a minister. I don't know if he's here. I've tried very hard to encourage him to come, but I don't know if he is here. But he's now the minister at Uxbridge Road Tabernacle over there in Shepherd's Bush. Getting people in who can speak to the young. I don't know if Pastor Jack Seaton is here, but at our 15th church anniversary, I asked Pastor Seaton if he would speak to the children, and with no visual aids at all. Now, I have no problem with visual aids, how necessary and wonderful they are. But Sunday school people, you know, don't need visual aids. I've learned this over the years. I do, but... And Pastor Seaton held the Sunday school and Bible classes in a joint meeting with no visual aids, purely by the interest of the materials he presented. It was quite remarkable. And here you can see passion and concern and interest speaking to the children at the anniversary and getting people in, if you need to inspire your people, that they may have a heart for the young. I was going to deal with some objections, but I did mention to Brother Cooper that I was just going to say something which I hope would be encouraging. You know, I don't know if you'll remember this, but you used to collect a lad for the Bible classes called Marcus Barnes. Lived in a place called Snowfields up near Blackfriars. Some of you may remember if you've been at the Tabernacle for a long, long time. And I remember Chris asking me, because presumably conversation was rather sparse in the car, what do you talk to these lads about? And I think I can remember saying, well, you just have to find out what they're interested in. They might be interested in boxing or football or music or... Well, I don't have to say any more, but Chris, of course, going round, stirring and encouraging, instructing, helping, being such an example. Don't say you can't do this. You know, if you can speak to a child, yes, you may need help, but yes, you can do it, and children will come. And therefore, what possible reason can there be for not starting a Sunday club? Training of the teachers and seeing those who are converted working amongst others. My third guiding principle, very quickly, and here I slightly will appear to disagree with the way things are done at the tabernacle, but I don't disagree at all. But I must try and say carefully that the Sunday school is part of the whole operation. I don't think it's an end in itself. Now, I had a very sad experience in 1981 when I took over from Mr. Avery. As a lad in the Sunday school, those of you who have been here a long time will remember the McIntosh family. He was Colin and he had a sister called Esther. And Colin came to me one Sunday and said, "I'm not coming anymore, Mr. Clark." This was in November 1981. I said, "Why is that, Colin?" And he said, "I'm the oldest here and there's nothing for me to do." I've never seen him since. But you know, I made it a point of prayer and effort. No one will ever say that again. Never again will a 12-year-old say, "I'm too old and there's nothing here for me." And by God's goodness and grace, but it's not my subject, the Friday night meetings were started in 1984 at the tabernacle here, and no 12-year-old, I suspect, since then has been able to say in this place, "There is nothing for me. I'm too old for Sunday school." Therefore, Sunday school needs to be supported. And we very, very quickly got the Bible classes going. If we went back, and I'm not confident I could do it, so if you could imagine Alison and Emma, both their testimonies say this. They came to Sunday school, they listened, they were regular, but when they got to secondary school, they wondered about whether they should keep coming, and they stopped coming. Now, they started coming again because we had weeknight meetings and because we had Bible classes. What a tragedy to see girls and boys up to the age of 11. Wonderful as that is, and the Lord, of course, can save children when they're children. But if you've taught and laboured and prayed and urged and encouraged, and you lose them. So Bible classes, weeknight meetings for teenagers, and weeknight meetings for the Sunday club. Can I just say one thing about weeknight meetings for Sunday club? We're not a big church, and our parish, as we call it, has about 5,000 homes. I understand that's about 13,000 people on normal occupation norms. We simply cannot visit. We need to recruit to Sunday school. How do we do it? And we've scratched our heads and we thought we'll do it with a weeknight meeting. And we have a Friday night weeknight meeting from 6 till 7:15 and it recruits into Sunday club. I would argue therefore that it does support the Sunday club, and we've had over 100 children into that Friday night 6 till 7:15 meeting. This is 7 to 11 year olds since September. But a quarter of them, one in four, has come in to Sunday school, and over half of our regular Sunday school children came in through the Friday night meeting. We use all the materials that are on the table, and we must keep our eye on recruiting. I've no time for materials and resources, so let me just start doing my last slide and I can sit down. Another old friend, you may know Mr. Roberts, he told me he wouldn't be here, I thought I'd better tell him. A bus. That bus, the Tabernacle kindly sold it to us for £250. We got £125 for it for scrap value about 4 months ago. It did 15,000 miles for us for £125. That's remarkable, isn't it? And you can get a vehicle just like that. Go round and pick the children up. They love coming in the vehicles. Get the cars out. And every car involved in bringing the children in. In a way, it is true, the capacity is limited by space or by transport, but I don't think by teachers. We can do far more under the Lord than we think that we might be able to do. Dr. Masters, perhaps my last comment in one of the books says, if you go into a church and there's no young people in the church, it's probably the case that there's no Sunday school. Well, that is so true, isn't it? And so sad. And rather than bemoaning the lack of young people in the church, why not go and under the Lord, with effort and prayer and application and encouragement, seek to bring them in and to win them? for the Lord.